Ladies and gentlemen, number 19, teacher, Masahiro Tanaka! Watch as Masahiro Tanaka throw a good fastball, a very good splitter, a pretty good slider, sometimes a cut fastball, and sometimes a curveball. Mr. Tanaka very excited after a good spring to pitch the opening day for the New York Yankees. Today, they play the Tampa Bay Rays. Let's see the action. Ooh, not very good. There's early trouble for Tanaka as Evan Longoria hit a big home run. Hopefully, Mr. Tanaka can rebound. Oh, no. Rogan Morrison, he hit a home run. Well, that will do it for Masahiro Tanaka Day, opening day 2017. He go 2.2 innings, give up 7 earned runs, and Joe Girardi pull him. Oh well, Mr. Tanaka, we will see you next time on the Yankee Baseball. Do not be too hard on yourself, and we will have another chance. New York Yankee lose to Tampa Bay, 7 runs to 3 runs. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Try to be best, cause you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got a hand tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one,
and you can have your dream. You're the best around. You're a big fat freaking clown around. Why is my duty not that brown? Yeah. Nothing. So Tanaka, don't worry about it today.
Not today.
That was like the radio version to Asians of me doing a minstrel show in blackface. But luckily that wasn't me, what we just heard in the intro of the show, right? So no one needs to be offended.
That wasn't you.
That was an Asian friend of mine, saying.
It was another one of our guests.
I'm saying otherwise it would be offensive. It would be like me being in blackface,
okay,
right? But yeah, it's not that, because that wasn't me.
You're not offensive at all.
That was... or racist. All right, you know this is episode 44, right? Did you know that?
I didn't, actually.
Okay. Wait, that's right, though, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Who wears number 44 in the past? Who wore it is how there's a... You know, they invented a word to say wears in the past, and it's called war. Who wore that number in baseball?
Who wore number 44? Well, 44 is a much better number than we've seen previously.
Are you just delaying as you search it with the sentence filler?
No, I wouldn't do that.
Don't disrespect the listeners.
I wouldn't do that. So we have Hank Aaron, 22 years, then Reggie Jackson, and Willie McCovey.
Oh, wow. These are good people. Any current players that are worth noting?
We also got one-year Jose Canseco. Roy Oswalt is the most recent player, then Jake Peavy. Other than that, not many recently. Chili Davis.
That's a good number. All right. No. 44 is one of the best. I mean, I don't remember that much, but I think I'll take it. All
Paul
right.
Goldschmidt is
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I didn't want to. And doesn't Rizzo have a high number in the 40s, too, or something? 41?
Yeah.
What do you think about double numbers? Isn't that something in hockey? Like, it's like a big deal to wear like 99 or 66 or 88, or they just happen to be good?
Yeah,
I think
that has to be something, because like Gretzky
thing.
Is 99.
Right, Lindros.
Jager was 66.
Right. Okay. Mark Messier was 11, right?
Yeah, it's got to be something.
Chad Pennington was 10. That's a double number. I don't know. That's always my number in the show.
10.
So anyway, yeah. That's my number and things because of Chad. All right, so there's episode number 44. Today was opening day, as you heard in the intro. And right now, you know, currently the Cardinals are playing the Cubs as we're recording this. And the two games earlier where the Yankees lost, Tanaka got blown up by the Rays 7-3. And then the
Giants got two blown saves in one game, which it was like what they spent all the money to sign Mark Melanson last year. Tanaka. Bumgarner killed it. What are your thoughts on the game, either game? Well, first, let's reset. Are you worried about Tanaka? What do you think of the game today?
I mean, it's one of those things where he was just lights out during spring training, and you want to discount it as it's only one start, but if that's the start to the season, I could see it having a negative emotional effect on a player, right?
You calling him frail?
Well, not necessarily just him, but if you're a player and you have a fantastic spring training and then your first opportunity in a real game, you just get absolutely smacked around, it might make you question a little bit.
Well, I think that's better than sucking in the spring and then sucking day one. That would probably be worse mentally.
Yeah, well, for sure.
But, you know, by the way, the one thing I was happy about in this game was that Evan Longoria hit a home run. I bet amongst our props, we put them all in, actually. The only thing that was different, I added the Royals under 76 wins for $100. And Evan Longoria, I put $100 on him hitting more than 28.5 home runs. So I had under originally, but so that was good for me. But I was sad to see, you know, Tanaka's so consistent, and I love, we praise him as underrated. He's like the best in the Cole Hamels, like A-minus ace tier, right?
Yep.
Like he's our boy. So whatever. I mean, I was not that closely watching. Like. I had it on, but what were the pitches that he missed with? Was he just throwing too many fastballs? It looks like he threw 50% fastballs. I mean,
yeah, he just missed in a couple of bad spots, and the first inning was just really rough. I'm almost sure they were one hitter away from batting around, and so he was pretty lucky to escape only giving up three in the first inning. But then, you know, there was an at-bat against Kevin Kiermaier in the second inning where it was a 3-2 count, and he just missed the strike zone, and it was a walk. And then the next batter was the Longoria home run. So, yeah, he didn't have great location today. And, you know, the fastball when he misses is just like a batting practice.
Yo, that's throw. That's what they said, that his fastball when it's off is just brutal. What why is that? That stadium is so ugly. It's like what do you think is the ugliest stadium in all baseball? I think the Tampa Bay is pretty bad.
Yeah, Tampa Bay is definitely,
absolutely nobody. Like the new MLB The Show came out a couple days ago, and I've been losering out about it, and nobody in their own custom team has that stadium because it's hideous even in the video game world.
Yeah,
the Royals I used to hate, but the waterfalls are cool. But I hate the crappy 70s architecture looking stuff. Shea Stadium was pretty bad. You know, my own Mets, but that's no longer.
The Red Stadium I'm not a huge fan of.
Really? Why? You don't like the steamboat look?
The Brewers, I don't like that stadium either.
Yeah, yeah. You don't like the slide?
No.
Remember, what's his name? I got that scoop on Bernie. I hope he's doing good.
The other stadium is the Rangers Stadium is okay.
I like it. Why? You don't like that stuff in center field? I like the beams and stuff. I think it looks cool.
Let me recast my vote. I think the Angel Stadium is the second worst. There's just nothing there
there's some rocks in center field that are there.
nice rocks.
There's some rocks that are there.
A couple of flags.
Yeah, yeah. I do like the stadium. I do think it's cool to have how the Angels has the really low right field corner wall. Something about that is cool, that the fans are right there, like at Fenway.
Yeah.
I think it's an ugly stadium too, but I'm just like that would be cool. If you would design a stadium like in the outfield dimensions, what would you pick? What would you take? Your team skill, you don't know yet. It's just going to be random. Just like as far as aesthetic or whatever, fan experience.
I kind of like the way that the Astros Park is, where one left field
fucking hill in the middle of outfield to injure your players.
Not the hill, but like left field is so close and it's a high wall. So I feel like for the fans, that's a great viewpoint. And then center field is just so deep. So it's got a unique aspect to it.
You could either like totally go from crushing a home run that's a fly ball elsewhere to hitting it as good as you can, but it's not a home run, like
yeah,
center to left. You like that in one park?
Yeah, I think that's got a cool element to it.
Yeah, yeah. And what would you ever do something like the Diamondbacks' crazy high center field wall and stuff? Or
no, not that.
I like their stadium. I've been outside of it, and I didn't realize it's below ground level. Like you look in, and the actual field is sunken below the street, like where you enter.
Oh, is
like
it?
Like if you look, their street level is above that wall in center field. That crazy wall that looks like a tabletop or something.
Yep.
And how about in the out? Would you have put some fancy rocks or a pool? What would you put? Some Tom McLaughlin's Cove with some spitball games or something?
Definitely a pool.
Tanaka's titties or
maybe
something?
Like a mini golf course.
A pool with a glass floor to look. Isn't that what they have in like Jacksonville or something? It's like, or the Rays have a pool or the.
The Jaguars have a pool, but the one wall is glass. So you can see out onto the stadium.
So people like that guy who jerked off on the field can jerk off. You saw that video of that guy on the field in San Diego with his hand in his pocket. Literally, cheerleaders are right in front of him, and he's standing on the field, and he with his hand in his pocket is clearly masturbating. He got fired. Yo,
this was a coach?
This was no, a security guard.
Oh my god.
Like a rinky dink security, like holding stuff, you know.
That's really weird.
Dude, it was so awesome. I'm going to show you. But so anyway, and then what about the Giants? That's our thoughts on the Yankees and our stadiums. The Giants spend the money on Mark Melanson, and both Derek Law came in with a 4-3 lead after Madison Bumgarner hit two home runs and they had a lead in the eighth. He blew it.
Yep.
Then it's 4-4. The Giants take the lead 5-4. And then Mark Melanson, it's like, oh, they got the lead back. At least what they paid for can do his job. And then he blows it, and they lose. Greinke pitched only five innings. He may still not be good. Like unfortunately for Greinke, last year may be a fluke.
Yeah, maybe
not a fluke.
I was a little bit shocked, even in the fantasy baseball drafts I've done, that Greinke was so low on the average draft position. I mean, he had that one great year, but the year before that, I don't think he was even that great. So last year was terrible. That Arizona is an underrated hitter's ballpark as
but
well.
Do you think that I didn't know you think it is?
It is, yeah.
Because their infield is so fast. That's what they say, that ground balls there have like a great chance to be hits because their infield's fast and stuff.
And the dry heat, the ball flies.
But what do you mean? So, to be clear, you're saying Greinke is underrated or overrated, you think? Or heading into the season, you thought he was being taken later than...
Yeah, I thought he was being taken a little bit later than he maybe should have, but then I started digging into the numbers, and it was pretty much right.
And what were they? Like, what...
I mean, last year he was obviously awful. The year before that, he had the record ERA. But then the year before that, it was pretty much like a slightly above league average season, what I would expect from an average number three starter.
Yeah, but then before that, he had won a Cy Young. I mean,
he's not with the
Royal. Like he's capable of being good. But maybe he's like Felix Hernandez. That it's like I don't even know what I mean by that. Like somebody who's capable of greatness, who's just like not that good anymore. I don't know. It's funny how, you know, the other similar example, and I want to ask you about update, because we recorded our thoughts before we did our fantasy drafts on like what we thought was going to happen, and I was listening back, and some of my opinions were retarded. Like I thought that I would be willing to take Gary Sanchez in like the fifth round. He didn't go till like the ninth round.
Mm-hmm.
And I also hated Manny Machado and ended up taking him. But, you know, somebody like, it's almost like a collective, when everybody thinks the same way, it like,
it snowballs,
right? So everybody's like, Greinke's done, he's falling off. Then he'll fall even more, right? Or like David Price, everybody seems to think there's no way he's coming back this year. And so he goes to like the 15th round. I don't know.
Yeah, that definitely happens. Even I took him in one league, but a player like Javi Baez, who's had actually a very small sample size of being great
I'm showing Tom the video of this guy jerking off on the field.
Yeah,
and
that's disgusting.
Tom lost traction mid sentence. He's like, well, Javi Baez, who has a small, Describe what you see for the listeners.
No, I mean, it's a security guard with his hand in his pocket.
Standing on the football field.
It looks like he's trying to cover his
hand. He thinks that because nobody can see his hands, that they, because he can't see his hands, that nobody else can.
That's so weird.
It's an overhand maneuver, like overhand up and down. So anyway, sorry. So Javi Baez, yeah.
Small,
like,
sample size.
Right. Smaller than I thought, because from watching him in the playoffs, I felt like, oh, this is a player I'm more familiar with than I was.
And he looks great for all intents and purposes.
But he went very late in drafts.
And he, well, I mean, he was about like the 100th pick, which is, I think, pretty high for where he should be. The saving grace for me was sort of that he could play second, third, and short. But if you look at his numbers, he strikes out a lot. He doesn't really steal as many bases as you would think, because the net stolen base kind of cancels out. And
there's no way he was the 100th pick. He was way later.
No, I mean, at his average draft position in Fantrax is 100.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
In both my drafts, you went later. You ended up with him, right?
I did.
So what is your general, what were you surprised at or not otherwise in general with the fantasy drafts that you had or after, you know, we actually went through with them?
Yeah, one thing that kind of stuck out was...
How stupid you are? No, I'm kidding. Your teams are awesome.
And this makes sense, but the players who are a little bit older, so like Miguel Cabrera, Adrian Beltre, he got injured, but it's a little bit of a separate point. But those players who are a little bit older who still have put up fantastic seasons, they seem to drop an extra round or
two. I think that's absolutely such a good point. And I think that it's true where people, including me, have a hard time separating fantasy from a real team, because obviously the movement in baseball is to get controllable players and more young guys are coming up sooner, right? And more young guys are contributing right away. And so, you know, I guess that spills over into our thinking of building a fantasy team when it's not true. Like, Beltre is awesome still, you know, like, I mean, but I fell into it. Like, I have that bias that I'm afraid that, like, they're just not going to be good. Like, I didn't want Miguel Cabrera for some reason. It's friggin' Miguel Cabrera, like, he's still great.
Yeah,
but I guess that's an exploitable part where you could take old players. You know, I thought that in both leagues, the starting pitchers, like the first 20 or 25 starting pitchers, were much more like valuable assets than like our people were acting like they're much more valuable, both in a points and roto league, than I thought they were going to act like. Like, they were much more hot commodities than I thought. And my other takeaway from the fantasy drafts, which I didn't realize to think about until after, is Yu Darvish. Like I'm even more happy that I picked the Rangers over Wins after looking up Yu Darvish and reading about Yu Darvish and how he's healthy and how good he is and how he's 30. Like, he could win the Cy Young. He's awesome.
Yeah, he's a lot younger than you would expect.
Yeah, man.
One other thing that really struck me too was, and this is obvious if you listen to baseball discussion last year, but just how many home runs have been hit.
Oh, yeah. Like, there's like a million 15 home run guys. It's like nothing.
The last pick in my other draft, I picked Jed Jerko.
And there's a head-to-head categories weekly league?
Yes.
Okay.
30 home runs last year. And he plays first, second, third, and short. Or at least he has eligibility.
Yeah.
It's like 30 home runs that late. I mean, that's...
No, I remember Ryan Schimpf, and you were like, Ryan Schimpf, who the hell is that? Like, basically,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
And he hit like 20 home runs. There's never been more like 15 home run guys. You know, so yeah, home runs. Okay. So then it's like, then the discussion becomes like, you know, so do you think it's like, that's something you shouldn't go for versus like do you regret, you ended up going sort of for steals late and early, I think, just the best available player, and then let that shape your team, right?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That was my strategy too, but you know, you took Clayton Kershaw first and then you get to relax and then pick, I don't know.
No, but timing is everything, right? Because in my other league, wow, I can't even remember who I actually took first in the other league, but I think I was the 7th pick. And
I think you took Machado, no?
I took Machado. So I was the sixth or seventh pick, and just the way the board kind of fell, it was like there's a clear advantage to being one of the, you know, top three picks.
With who were those three?
Trout, Kershaw, and say Arenado or Betts. So even four. But the other thing I was going to say too is I picked third in the league we did together, but then I was seventh out of 14 in the other one I did, so exactly in the middle. And there's such a huge advantage at being at one of the ends because you can predict accurately, you know, who will probably be on the board when you pick again, because there's only, say, two or three picks in between your next pick.
Yeah.
In a snake draft. And so, like, when I was picking seventh, you know, I was waiting
in how many teams?
Exactly.
Team
14
oh,
teams.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So it was like almost exactly 14 picks each time. So I couldn't say, like, all right.
Well, but
there's four guys on the board and there's three picks in between now and then. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's nice. But the counter argument is I was on the wraparound. I picked, 11th in a 12 team league. And so I was, you know, 11th, two picks in between, but by the same guy, and then me again. The only thing I felt left out of every trend, like a run of relievers goes, I can't jump in. Like, I'm too late. I have to wait too long. Or like a run of this runs, and also after you pick your last pick, if you're the wraparound, it's so hard to plan ahead because you got to predict 24 picks from now. It's like you don't know what's going to.
Sure.
Like it's hard. It's really hard to envision who's going to be like going then. So like, you know, I had players in my queue that were way to go on the next pick that I thought would be there. Whatever. I mean, so anyway, but we ended up with similar teams. We both love Joey Votto this year, but I put you onto him with my Italian meatball. You put me on. Well, you took Yoannis Cespedes. He's mad underdrafted. He's underrated in fantasy.
Yeah, I didn't understand that at all.
Yeah, he's getting drafted way later than he should have. I don't even know who else. Like Jose Quintana, we both, you know.
Yep.
I love DeGrom even more now after, again, drafting him and then reading about how healthy he is this year.
So we were talking about it. You said you listened to it on a podcast. Who are some players that next year you think will jump, say, 50 spots in average draft position?
Or like, right. Guys who are like out of the top, whatever, right? That like will jump. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. Alex Bregman, obviously, everybody's choosing. They named this whole list, and it was all players I took with dumb luck, like Byron Buxton. But I don't know. I haven't seen anything from Byron Buxton. I mean, the only reason I drafted him is because of everybody must be right?
The prospect rankings.
But this is how I feel with Andrew Luck. It's like I've never with my own eyes watched Andrew Luck be as great as everybody says he is. And it's the same with me with Byron Buxton. I'm just on faith that everybody says that. And obviously that's how you have to do it with most baseball. You know, we haven't watched Yoan Moncada play really. Like,
yeah, I've seen more Moncada than Buxton, but I feel that way with Buxton, you know, because the big crucial variable in whether he lives up to being the number one prospect for all those years is can he hit for power? And I just haven't seen it. You know, the speed is obviously there, so he's going to be a great defensive player. He's
right,
got a great
and at
arm.
Worst, he's on rosters, like, with great center field play and speed, right? Because
yeah,
look at Billy
like,
Hamilton, who, you know, is still on a roster.
He's like Cameron Maben was back in the day when he got traded in the Miguel Cabrera trade.
Yeah.
With Miller for Miggy. And Maben just never really had the power develop. Buxton very well could, but Moncada, I think, going back to that question of the, you know, rising 50 spots, Moncada got drafted pretty high, but I'm all in on him. I think he's going to be phenomenal.
This year, like, you think, but the question is, for next year, who's going to rise that much? Like, yeah.
Yeah, I think he'll be drafted really high. I wouldn't be surprised if he was, I mean, this isn't that much of a hot take, but I think he'll be the third second baseman taken next year.
After who would
Altuve, you say? Daniel Murphy.
Yeah, and then you think Cano will be after him or something. Yeah. Cano could fall. I mean, dude, it's so hard with baseball. Like, you never know. Some players randomly just fall off and get injured, and then some don't. All right, so the other thing – well, oh, sorry. Is there any other players that we haven't named? Keon Broxton, I don't know anything about him, but they seem to like him.
Lance McCullers, I – picked up in both
leagues.
Yeah,
we both like him. He was hurt last year a lot, but he has really good peripherals and stuff. I like him.
Yeah, I'm trying to actually bring it up. His stats last year were phenomenal.
But he just didn't play. He only threw 170 innings or so. Oh, no. Yeah.
He actually only pitched 81 innings last year, but 81 innings, 106 strikeouts, 3.22 ERA.
He's like Darvish. Like, look up Darvish's number. Darvish had more strikeouts than innings in like that many innings. I was mistaken, McCullers. That's how many points he scored in a points league, where the average is like 400. What format do you think you like the best of fantasy baseball? Like, what's more represent? I should, let me phrase it like this: which is more fun, but two, which do you think is a fair representation of what wins games? Because on one hand, the argument could say, well, Roto is like a balanced, you know, you need a balanced team to be good at stuff, defense aside, obviously. And, you know, points would just be like, it's just the equals successful stuff. Like, you get a point for every plus play.
Yeah, I think more fun is obviously head-to-head.
Head-to-head points or categories?
Head-to-head. Points
like FanDuel scoring,
exactly. Yeah, that's more fun.
But what do you think is more representative?
More representative is probably categories, not head to head, like just
on the season, like a regular Roto league.
Like, you just accumulate stats, maybe not even on a week, but like at the end of the season, there's 12 teams, and whoever comes in first in a category gets 12 points.
Yeah. That's like a regular rotisserie league. What would you say? How many stats? Obviously, you can't do 14, but let's just pretend Tom is creating a fantasy league, and we'll max it out. Let's just say for fun, it's only five categories in each, hitting and pitching. What would be your five categories that like most represent all aspects of winning baseball games in real life?
So,
obviously, you're not having average. Most Roto leagues, just so people know, most rotisserie leagues have home runs, average, steals, runs, and RBIs on offense. We'll do offense first. And obviously, we would both throw out average right away. I would replace it with OPS. What would you put?
Yeah, OPS, maybe even OPS plus if you can do that.
Dude, it's yours. You can do whatever you want, bro.
What is that other total bases I like as
well. Yeah, that's in our league. What are you replacing that with? The traditional runs? Forget runs. Total bases.
Yeah.
OPS, come on,
No, take away RBIs, all right. I don't mind runs.
Okay, because you need those to win games.
Yeah, and then I forget the actual name of the stat, but it's it takes into account stolen bases. It's basically like your WAR of base running. So it's like the incremental
create. Okay, yeah.
Through base running.
Uh-huh.
And then I think home runs, and I also...
Nah, home runs matter.
I do like the strikeout one because I think it adds an interesting dynamic, right? Because then when you have strikeouts and home runs, you know, those are usually trending in the same direction.
Right.
So I kind of like those challenges per se.
Well, you can only pick five, so this is the tough part.
OPS plus, total bases, home runs, strikeouts, and then the base running additional runs.
Okay. And so, wait, what did I forget that you just...
Runs, I think.
Oh, runs. Yeah, you're ditching runs now.
Yeah, we'll take runs.
And then how about pitching?
Pitching. So I was going to...
The traditional ones are wins, ERA, strikeouts, saves, and what's the other one? Whip.
I was going to mention, in one league I'm in, I think it's ridiculous that, and apparently it's a new trend, that you do home runs allowed for pitchers. I don't know. It just kind of pissed me off.
That's too specific of a stat. Like,
yeah, it's just adding more value to the relievers or like pitching less innings.
Right. Yeah. Counting. Right. Yeah. Negative counting stats are stupid because like that would mean a middle of the road starter hurts your team.
Exactly.
That's stupid. Yeah. It should be anything. Like, innings eaters should be valuable in fantasy.
And
like,
even Kershaw is going to give up more home runs than like a bottom tier reliever.
Right, right,
he's
right.
Pitch
or a guy who's a fill-in star like Seth Lugo or somebody who's like the sixth man and then comes in sometimes in the Mets rotation when Harvey's vagina hurts again. All right, so what are your pitching stats? Strikeouts, obviously.
Opponents OPS plus. So basically, the OPS
high level.
They give up.
All right. What are you taking away for that though? ERA, opponents OPS plus.
I'm gonna take away ERA.
All right.
FIP, fielding independent
instead
pitching.
Of what wins, obviously.
Instead
fuck
of wins.
Wins,
I would lump together saves and holds as one stat and. Give a hold 1.5 points per hold and then a save 2 points.
And would you make it, and how much are you costing them per blown save? Which will lead us into the next thing I'm going to ask you. But
per blown save, I would say should be -5.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
And I don't even think that that's that much.
But I mean,
but yeah,
most leagues it's 1-1. Like,
right.
What's your fifth category? And then I'll comment.
So
on
I had
that.
OPS.
You had opponents OPS plus, strikeouts, FIP, holds plus saves, and now there's one more. It's WHIP in standard leagues.
I would the two
quality
I'm torn,
starts.
The two I'm torn between are quality starts and then strikeout to walk ratio.
I'll go
with strikeout to walk ratio.
I disagree. I think quality starts more represent what wins games, but. But I understand that you looking at it like that. Because especially in a trend where if pitchers go more and more short length of time, then quality starts is a harder stat to come by. It's like a complete game being a stat. It's like at some point it's ridiculous.
I'll change to go to quality start because if you take out wins and losses, you're going to have the stat for saves and holds. So you want to have something, you know... for targeted towards starting pitchers, so that balances out.
All right, so you hear her first. Tom is creating Tom God Fantasy League with real stats. It's interesting you changed pitching more than hitting stats, right? Like your pitching choices, and I agree with you for the most part, are more far from like the traditional pitching stats than the hitting ones you chose.
Yeah, and
I think because wins and saves are overrated, and so is ERA, right? People like FIP isn't a very mainstream stat.
Yeah.
WHIP finally, WHIP has been, but, and quality starts is getting there. It's funny that the pitching stats are still more behind than the hitting stats.
They're less well-known because...
The good ones.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, even OPS at this point, I feel like it's become part of just the jargon of...
Yeah,
baseball commentators. But the funny part is, I think people don't even necessarily understand OPS, but they can just—it's a numerical number you can compare every single position player by. So,
right. You mean people just have a feel for what's a good number and what's a bad one? They can't appreciate it, like.
Yeah, I mean.
All right. Well, let me ask you. You said you would give 2 points for a save and -5 for a blown save, and this is something I texted you about earlier in the week, asking you what your opinion was, and this is that in our league it's net saves, right, which is just you +1 for a save and -1 for a blown save, and so, you know, well, I just realized if your league is your league would be a points league, points categories, because you just said 2 and -5, whatever.
Sure.
We'll just say you're making up numbers. It's you're the god of it. But anyway, so you're saying it's about 2.5 saves is worth 1 blown save.
Right.
Is that what you think it is in real life?
No, I think it's much higher in real life.
What do you think it is?
From what I was seeing, just to give like general parameters, if you can convert over, say, 87% of your saves...
Save opportunities.
Right, then you're pretty much in the elite category. If you're anywhere between 75 and, like, 85 or 87, that's pretty good. And then below then, you probably don't have a closing job for too long.
Yeah, okay.
But this whole thing, right, it just shows how ridiculous that particular statistic is, right? Because you saw Andrew Miller last year and they a team finally uses him the right way in the highest leverage situations.
Right.
So I don't know. Hopefully in the future they will have more mainstream stats that can take into account how much leverage a situation is.
I'm not even interested in necessarily, not to cut you off, but I'm not even interested in that. I am. You're right. There needs to be a stat of like a new reliever stat where it's like, how good are you? Something like FIP. No, but right. but like a new reliever stat. Given the leverage and stuff, right? But I was just interested in it from like thinking about baseball just on the most basic level, like steals. Also, our league has net stolen bases, which is your steals minus your caught steals. And it's just like how many successes is worth a failure, right? Obviously, you know, you can if you hit a home run, but you get if you go 1-for-4 with a home run, you're slugging 1,000. You're getting one base per at bat, right?
Yep.
So one home run is worth like, well, I don't even know. Let's say good, you want to slug 500, right? So what would that be? 4-8, right?
Yeah.
If you go 1-for-8 with a home run, you're slugging 500.
That's pretty good.
And that's pretty good. Absolutely, that's good. I mean, you're only going to be batting, what is that? I can't do math. 200?
125.
I'm an idiot. So you're batting 125 but slugging 500. So it's like how many of this outcome is worth this outcome? And it's fun to talk about because then it's like when do you trade it? When would you pick? It's like my idea of like picking when you have this many Matt Harvey innings or somebody. It's like when are you going to use them?
Yep.
Right? And it's like distributing your success. It's like then you could say, all right, this guy's going to go 1-for-8 every 8 at-bats and hit a home run. It's like, but wait a minute. Can I just take 2 doubles and then spread it out? And then it's like, all right, he's you know, 2-for-8 with 2 doubles. He's still slugging 500, 4 singles, whatever.
I mean, it's a hitting can be a game of extremes, right? If you hit home runs and you strike out 3 out of 4 times, and then you hit a home run 1 out of 3 hits, you're getting paid.
Well, what would you what's gonna win more games? A guy that hits a double every other at bat, or a team of all guys who hit a home run 1 out of every 4 at bats?
I mean, I think that the numbers clearly prove that it's the home run.
Wouldn't the numbers prove that it's the same or no?
I don't think so, because here's just the way I would look at it. When you have that guy that hits the double, he's still dependent on another guy hitting a double to score the run, whereas the home run, the point's immediately on the board.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but it's only so how many outs are in a baseball game?
27.
I'm kidding. I'm joking. 27. So you'd score like 6 runs a game with the home run team, right? And then if every other at bat you hit a double, let's figure this out, bro. This is important stuff. How much, like, what would it be? So 0.5 times 0.5 times 0.5. So the chance that you get no doubles in an inning is only 12%.
Yeah.
Right? So you're probably scoring, I feel like you score more runs with the doubles, guys.
It's going to be a really difficult
calculation. It's probably very boring radio.
It's going to be really difficult
to
calculate.
But it's a very interesting idea, huh? Huh?
Yeah.
I'm a genius. So what about steals, bro? What do we find? How about getting a caught stolen? How many successful steals is that worth? Is it 1-to-1 like our fantasy league would suggest?
No, yeah. So they basically the numbers pointed out that you need to be successful around 75% of the time to
justify getting caught.
Right. And I think that obviously speaks to the bigger picture of the kind of base running stolen base part of the game is kind of dying out, because if the number is that high, you know,
you need to be really good at it.
And there are very specific circumstances where it's really worth it.
Right. Right. So I think two things, if offenses keeps going up and home runs were a boom last year, steals are historically down when offense is up. As they should be, because if you steal and then the next guy hits a home run, you risked that for no reason.
Yeah.
And two, as sabermetrics becomes more and more mainstream, I think that managers will be more afraid to tell them to steal in situations. They'll realize that it may not be as necessary.
Yeah.
I was reading an article before we started on Beyond the Box Score about the house lower percentage of the steals, and I forget what it was, but it was like 22% of all the stolen bases were ended up being necessary, where it was like that they wouldn't have scored otherwise, or that was the only run scored in the inning. If you were a manager, what situations would you tell your team to steal in?
Two outs, runner on first, almost definitely.
At what rate? Like, say, what if there was a 65% successful guy, would you have him steal in that situation?
Yeah, I think more so than I wouldn't. I think.
What do you mean more so than you wouldn't?
I would say in most situations, I would have that guy steal. It depends if there's a great hitter at the plate. Depends if it's a power hitter or a contact hitter.
Well, tell me for each. If there's a contact hitter.
Sure. So, I mean, if it's my best hitter, I would probably still. Actually, you know,
that's
I'd
more
probably
incentive
have
to
them
steal.
Try to go all the time, because then I'd want him to lead off the inning.
Right. That's what I was just saying. If you get caught, then your guy leads off. The only guy I wouldn't do it with is somebody like Mark Teixeira, who hits 200 in his last year or whatever. You know, some guy hitting 200 with 40 home runs.
Yep.
Him, I'm not stealing, but I guess I would agree. But 65%, you just said, what are you ignoring the numbers, Tom? You just said 75% to justify it.
No, but that's
the situation overrides that.
Well, that number was gotten to by taking into account all various situations. And
you're Hawk Harrelson right now. Don't try to wiggle your way out of numbers. Don't work.
I'm not wiggling my way out.
Don't you chew yourself out of this? Sorry.
I'm not.
What are you saying?
No, I'm saying that 75% number was basically, they got to that by combining all situations. So no outs, runner on first and second, you steal then.
Oh, I understand what you're saying. You're saying that you made a mistake and you're wrong and you need to justify it.
No. So in that situation, if you steal with two outs with a runner on first, even if it's only 65% of the time, the additional run that you're going to get from getting that stolen base over...
I understand. Yeah. I'm just making fun of you. I'm trying to get you riled up, bro. Some fucking hot takes in here. What about bunting? When would you bunt, bro? I know that the only time... All right, so always it lowers your total expected runs in the inning. Always sacrifice bunting, assuming, you know, not assuming anything. Just every time you sacrifice bunt, if it works, you're always lowering your run expectancy for the inning. The total runs expected or whatever, right? But your probability that you score one run increases in the scenario where you have first and second and no outs.
Yep.
That's the only time that it increases your probability of scoring at least one run in the inning. All the other times it hurts it, which is surprising. I mean, that's, again, taking into account all situations, right? So I guess that's the thing with these stats, is that like a very specific situation, it calls for something different.
And you're making the assumption that the batter can bunt, and the overwhelming majority
look at Javi Baez in the World
Series.
The
overwhelming majority can't bunt at this point. Because you're not, you know, it's maybe an oversimplification, but you're not paid to bunt.
If you have one on and one out, and, you know, Clayton Kershaw, who, like, can hit 180, is at the plate, do you bunt in his tied game?
If he can bunt, then probably, yeah.
You would rather have one, yeah, instead of risk him hitting into the double play or whatever?
Yeah, there's the double play, and 180 is such a low amount. If it was even, say, a 250 hitter, I'd probably let him swing. That makes sense to me. Pitchers who generally have very low averages, who they won't even put the ball in play, and when they do, they hit into a double play. So, but again, like, that's making the assumption they can bunt.
Right, because, like, they could bunt into the double play or something.
Right.
Or bunt, and then they get the lead runner out, and then you have Clayton Kershaw have to run the bases like a dinghy.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I can't even...
Then you got to bring out the jacket.
I would say,
pussies.
Like, half the times I see them try to bunt in the major leagues at this point, it's either popped up or
it's terrible.
They get two strikes and then they can't bunt.
These damn hot shot kids, these penny loafer kids, hot wigging with their wagon and the hippity hop, they want to come out here and just try to hit bombs. That's not how we learn this game, right? When I was growing up in Brooklyn there, we had to fight for every inch of base pad, right? We had to fight and claw and scratch our way, gamers. We had dirt in our underwear after we got home because we was dying for that 90 feet. And now these guys just, whoa, yo, let me hit a home run. I'm Javi Baez. I don't know how to bunt in the World Series, but I'm going to get to win anyway.
Well, it also must have been really hard to learn how to bunt with a stickball bat, so.
Yeah, it was hard. It was very hard. I actually played stickball. There was one day my grandma was watching me in Bensonhurst, and it was like a movie, like where I was playing stickball across the street in the schoolyard, and she yelled out the window when dinner was ready, like, "Ryan, dinner's ready!" And I ran back across the street in Brooklyn and ate.
That's like Hey Arnold.
It is like Hey Arnold, so, you know, except I don't have a black friend.
Gerald?
You
don't have a Gerald?
I don't have. You're my Gerald.
Okay.
All right, so we're going to the Mets game Thursday. Do you have a prediction?
Mets win.
All right. So that's it, basically, for this episode. Yo, Twitter at us, yo. What's your Twitter?
At CapFigure.
Oh, yeah, we got it. You got the CapFigure. And I'm horrible stats, but you don't do CapFigure.
Don't add Ryan. He doesn't have anything to say.
What do you mean? Leave a review or something, bye. Right? That's it?
Yeah.
You good?
We're good.
Don't lie to me.
Don't leave a review.
What the hell is this reverse psychology?